It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. You've probably heard of the Manhattan Project, the code name for America's atomic bomb project during World War II. But do you know about the Ames Project? It was an important element of the Manhattan Project, and historian Leo Landis will give us the details later in the hour. But first, filmmaker Colleen Bradford Krantz of Pink Spear Productions has had an eclectic career, a career that has taken her from print journalism to documentary filmmaking. And now she just finished filming the pilot of her first fictional TV series. It's called Complete Bull. It's a drama about a female animal scientist reluctantly entering the male-dominated world of livestock insemination. And this project follows fast on the heels of another unique television series. It's called Unintended, Unlocking a Nation's Pregnancy Secrets. It's a series that tells the true stories of women who experienced unintended pregnancies in the early part of the 20th century. And here's a moment from the first episode, an episode that tells the tragic tale of a young Iowa woman named Myrtle Irish.
I first heard Myrtle's story here, in an old train depot in an eastern Iowa town. Kay Miles, a local history buff, told me about Myrtle as we sat here almost exactly 100 years after Myrtle died. I knew eventually I would research her story more, but I stalled for 3 years. Her story was full of the kind of things we don't talk about today, or we don't talk about calmly. But as one friend put it, figuratively, I hope, Myrtle's ghost was standing behind me, waiting. I finally decided to acknowledge Myrtle.
That's just a moment from Unintended, Unlocking a Nation's Pregnancy Secrets. The three episodes of this series can be streamed on demand on Vimeo. And Colleen Bradford Krantz is on the line with me now. Hello, Colleen.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And we'll talk about both your projects and what it's like to film during the pandemic. But I want to start with Unintended because it's such an unusual concept for a television series. Tell me about the idea when you first had it.
I really was motivated by the story I mentioned there in that opening you played with Myrtle Irish's story from 1913. And she lived in Hopkinton, Iowa, which is up kind of towards Dyersville area. And it was, you know, I kept thinking about Myrtle and all she went through and other women 100 years ago. And, you know, if they were unmarried and pregnant, and I knew if I jumped into this kind of controversial topic, I wanted to do something where it was very transparent and where we sort of brought it forward in time. So I ended up searching for descendants of each of these three couples in the stories and getting sort of their look back if they to see what they had to say 100 years later.
So often when we talk about abortion in this day and age, we do hear people say, if abortion is not legal, people will try to get abortions anyway. And there are these numbers that get thrown around. But these aren't stories that get told. These aren't stories we can put human faces on usually, because these are things that people kept in just the deepest kind of secrecy. How did you even go about trying to uncover stories of unintended pregnancies? These are not stories that tend to get passed down.
Yeah, and especially from a century ago, it was very hush-hush, and you didn't talk about this. You know, even if it resulted in an adoption, you just really didn't talk about it at all, and it was sort of would become a family secret. And so what you discover is that a lot of these cases that did become known maybe were only known because maybe the girl, you know, tried to have an abortion and died, or some other criminal case came about. But again, I will say that there's also descendants who are now wanting to look back, you know, 100 years later. And, you know, maybe they know grandma was adopted or mom was adopted, and they're wanting to dig into those stories now, maybe more than people have been wanting to in the past.
It was interesting. I have only watched the first episode of your series, but in watching this episode of Myrtle Irish, who died when she was very young, and that story was hushed up quite deeply. There, of course, was another person involved. You can't make a baby by yourself. So there was a father of her unintended pregnancy, and people didn't want you to share his name, even now, over 100 years later. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I really was. I thought, you know, I'm coming back to these stories a century later on purpose, thinking that none of the people directly affected, and really not even typically a second generation, are still living. So we're sometimes talking about maybe, you know, two generations down. And that was the case with the young man in this first episode, where I don't think any of his, so he, I don't want to get into too much detail, but basically I don't think he had any, you know, first or there was no second generation even still living. So we're talking about third generation. And there, besides them, also just the community where he's from was reluctant to, you know, to talk about him in that case because of the fact that there's still maybe some third generation descendants in the area, and they felt like it could hurt them. You know, they, in the end, I think they understood better that this was not a sort of political project. So I really did end up getting good cooperation overall, but I still, the family, the descendants still never felt comfortable talking with me about his part in that pregnancy.
Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I really was. I felt like we, I mean, I know a lot of society and families in general can feel put on or feel shame looking back at these events, but I kind of felt like time had might have cured that in a sense. You know, we're, you know, a century later, there's, I figured there would be room for sort of acknowledgement of mistakes happen, and, you know, we can move on and not sort of carry that same shame around so much later, you know, generationally, but it was not the case. So I was surprised.
The television series is a blend of documentary. You're sharing information that you've uncovered. You're showing old photographs and newspaper clippings and things like that. You're sharing your interviews with local historians, with descendants, with people who are related to the people you're telling stories about. But then there's also an element where you have brought in actors to recreate some of these moments in the lives of the people you're remembering. Tell me why you wanted to tell the stories in this way.
I think it's sometimes hard to put yourself in someone else's shoes if you're maybe just looking at the court documents I had or listening to experts. And it's different when you put a talented actor or actress on screen. And if they can pull it off and maybe stick as closely as we can to the facts, it's maybe more meaningful to the viewer to, you know, actually think what it would be like to be pregnant in 1913 in small town in Iowa, and, you know, have your parents feeling like you've just ruined your whole future. And then, you know, in the second episode, we talk about a young woman. It has an Iowa connection, but it's a young woman who gets basically sent away to one of these very common at the time sort of secret homes for pregnant women where she was to go have her baby. And if she changed her mind, you know, at that point, there wasn't much choice. But I just think doing those reenactments and sort of going into more depth than I have in my past documentary work with the reenactments, it really brings that to life.
Why was it so important to you to tell these stories?
I always seem to be drawn, whether it's good or bad, to the sort of tougher topics. I come from a journalism background, and I think it's really hard to have healthy conversation today when you get to the more controversial topics, such as unplanned pregnancy or abortion, you know, even sometimes adoption questions. So I just really like the idea of trying to tell a story in a way that encourages healthier conversation and genuinely does not try to push viewers to one conclusion or another, which is, you know, is not something I feel like you always get. And there's room for documentaries that do otherwise, but I just feel like you're going to be preaching to the choir one way or the other. And in this case, I really do hope anybody from any political point of view can sit down and watch it and feel like they've not been judged.
So bringing this series out during the pandemic, on one hand, it's hard to get much attention when there's so much news to talk about. On the other hand, people have been streaming content like never before. How have things gone releasing this series in this way?
Oh, it was such a shift in my plans. As you can imagine, we had some various film festivals around the country that we were had been accepted into, and so that was sort of going to be our release moment, and then we were going to follow it up with some larger in-person screenings in Iowa and Kansas City, where the second story is centered, and elsewhere. And of course, all that fell apart because it was all supposed to happen in, April and May. So all that's canceled, and I, like others who had productions about to release, you're struggling with the idea, do you just go ahead and release or wait? And I decided that while everyone was sort of at home and had time they might not have typically, that with unintended, we'd go ahead and release sort of direct to consumer because of the speed we can do that with. So it was Vimeo On Demand, the streaming platform we used, where we can go straight to consumer, basically. And that'll sort of be our first step. But it really did work out well, where we, I think we were able to sort of capitalize, at least for our first step release, that crowd sitting at home, looking for things to watch.
And what happens next with the series?
We'll start going to more subscription platforms. It'll be ultimately on Amazon Prime, hopefully, and elsewhere. We work with a sales agent who's working on that now, but that's sort of been the path for some of our past projects. And I think, having sort of moved past that moment for the live events, we'll continue adding it to other streaming platforms where it'll be, available by subscription and so on.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about the television series Unintended, Unlocking a Nation's Pregnancy Secrets. It is available for streaming on Vimeo right now, on demand. I'm talking with filmmaker Colleen Bradford-Krantz of Pink Spear Productions. And coming up in just a moment, we'll also talk about another series that she's planning in the future. They just shot the pilot for Complete Bull during this pandemic. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Pink Spear Productions has been very busy during this pandemic. They released their first television series, Unintended, Unlocking a Nation's Pregnancy Secrets, and filmed the pilot episode of Complete Bull. It's a drama about a female animal scientist reluctantly entering the male-dominated world of livestock insemination. And filmmaker Colleen Bradford-Krantz of Pink Spear Productions is here. And Colleen, I have so many questions about this as well. But let's just start with the concept of Complete Bull. So as I mentioned earlier, your career has gone from print journalism to now this is a fictional series, a series that's a drama based in Iowa. Tell me about the idea for Complete Bull.
Well, I grew up on a cattle ranch in western Iowa, Guthrie County, and so this is a world, it's probably the first time I've really done a production that comes closer to home, following the sort of rule of write what you know. And although the characters are really not based on anyone in particular, or anyone I know, I do think the world is, I grew up where my family on the ranch used artificial insemination. And probably before I really understood what I was helping with, I was part of that. And so I just felt like it was such a unusual world to most people, even in the Midwest, and an unknown world that it felt like just a great place to draw viewers into, but also sort of as a vehicle to help address what I think is maybe a misunderstanding of rural America and farm country.
And when I first read the description, I immediately assumed it was intended to be a comedy. I guess that's because I have a teenager's sense of humor. But this is a dramatic series. I mean, you're taking on a huge challenge of writing is an hour long drama. Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's right. And honestly, there's plenty of room for comedy here, as you can imagine. And I do think most people jump to that first. There's a lot going on that I wanted to work with that it really fits that hour-long drama better. We set the story against the background of the president having announced a relocation of first-generation legal immigrants, I guess you could say, documented immigrants who are being moved from areas that are struggling with water shortages, such as California, to what we call water-rich areas, as in Iowa and elsewhere. And so it's not only to look at this one woman's, young woman's life as she's deciding if she can make sort of her future in this industry and in this rural area of Iowa, but also the county's decision on what its future looks like.
You've been working on this project for quite a while, and I know you were planning on shooting this year, but why did you decide to continue with that plan, given all of the challenges of shooting with COVID-19?
Well, because I was finishing Unintended, I originally wasn't planning to go this year at all until we were lucky enough to be awarded one of the state's new green light grants, which I think we'll talk about a bit later more. But that really was an incentive, because here we had this opportunity to take this grant and match it and sort of leverage that into funding this pilot that might be hard to do on our own otherwise. And then our original start date was early May. And so you can imagine then we're in this dilemma. We pushed back our filming date to start with, but we had, you know, we had this whole story set in the spring. We had newborn calves in different scenes, and we also had the sort of unusual benefit, in a sense, of filming a lot of outdoor scenes in very isolated areas of Clayton County, which is where we chose to film most of this. So after a lot of work with public health in that corner of the state and the Screen Actors Guild, which we were working with, we basically decided to go ahead and, you know, seek that approval to move ahead, and we were able to gain that.
How did you do this with the cast, with the crew, with so many people working so closely together?
It was a lot of conversations to start with, as I mentioned, with SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, and the public health in Clayton County. But we basically came up with a list of rules, and it started out when we started filming, the state of Iowa was still under their 10-person limit for gatherings. And so we had to shrink our crew, and basically choose to film any scenes first that were outdoors and with just a few people. And so we really had to shuffle our schedule and try to keep that 10. We did. We kept that 10-person limit until it was lifted. And then even then we were really working with 13 to 15 people at a time at the most. And you can imagine what it looked like. We had, we're outside in, you know, 96 degree weather with masks on all the time as crew, and the cast would take theirs off for rehearsal and for the scenes, of course. But it's a lot of other steps, like taking temperature of everybody as they're arriving and, you know, just all those, standard practices that are recommended.
Did you try to quarantine, quote unquote, together? Did you try to stay with each other as much as possible and try to limit your interactions even with family and other people who were outside of that cast and crew?
You know, we talked about that a lot, but in the end, after talking with SAG too, they agreed, and we kind of all acknowledged that there's families that, you know, over a matter of 2 months of filming, we didn't want everyone to not see their families. And if we asked them to isolate with just families, somebody's still going out to the grocery store. And we just kind of reached the point where we thought we can't guarantee that we're not going to have somebody, you know, having to step out into a public arena at some point. So we really just said, let's try to stick with the people you live with and coming here, and just basically had to work under the assumption that everybody could be carrying it, which is why we put more emphasis on taking temperatures and wearing masks and lots of hand sanitizer and just working under that assumption that everyone could be carrying it, as far as we knew.
And for as far as you know, did you make it through this without any new infections?
Yeah, and it's amazing, really. We had, 15 days of filming, and, throughout the various days, we probably had 40 to 50 people involved, or maybe 50 to 60, and did not have a single report of anyone getting sick in the week or two after. Actually, I haven't heard of anyone yet, and, never had a temperature that was high. And I will say that was partly some of the strategies we had, but I'm sure it was also just a lot of luck, too.
Well, you are not the only production company that has been out working in Iowa during this pandemic. I am talking to Colleen Bradford Krantz of Pink Spear Productions. They shot the pilot episode for their series Complete Bull. And there have been other production companies coming to Iowa, contracting with Iowa, because Iowa is one of the few states that never issued a shelter at home order. It became kind of a hotspot for production companies. Liz Gilman is here with us. She is executive producer with Produce Iowa. Hello, Liz.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And
yeah,
tell me.
I have to say that Colleen's being a little modest. She was very brave. So I'm going to speak up. say that she was a very brave filmmaker, so I'm very proud of her.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Well, so Liz, I mean, at a time when everything was shutting down all over the country, you started getting phone calls about getting work in Iowa. Tell me what you started hearing and what started happening.
Yeah, I started getting busy in April. Because at first everyone kind of went into panic mode and, you know, and shut down and stuff, but then they realized on the coast, oh, it's going to be a while. So I started getting a lot of inquiries from agencies in LA and New York. I had some people from London contacting me. So all of a sudden the Midwest, you know, was looking very appealing to people with our wide open spaces and safer environment, I think. And of course, yeah, we weren't shutting down our state. So, yeah, we had a lot of interest, and I still get inquiries, but it was really strong for a good month or two in that April-May time period.
Very interesting. And some really exciting national projects came to Iowa and hired a lot of local Iowa people. Like there was a Bank of America ad that I'm sure many of us have seen that was shot here. Can you tell me a little bit about that project and how that played out?
Yeah, that was huge. So they contacted me and also the state of South Dakota and Nebraska, and they were wanting to know about crews. So I pointed them to our directory, and so they hired our crews. And afterwards, they gave me an email, and they're like, we are so proud of Iowa. They had such great video and took great direction. So about half of the spot features Iowa because of the quality of what they were getting from us.
Interesting. So that was an opportunity where a national company could contract with local videographers to get what they need?
Yeah, actually, the creative crew stayed in L.A., and then they would direct them on how to shoot, and then they would send the footage to them to review, and then they would keep shooting with their direction.
Oh, fascinating. And you actually had other filmmakers coming to Iowa and renting houses.
Yeah, I had a guy from, he has an office in Toronto and New York, and he ended up coming here and he stayed for a few weeks in an Airbnb in Des Moines and did a lot of recreations of crime drama. That's why he was working on.
Oh, interesting. What a strange time.
And the economic impact was great, too, because like with that Bank of America spot, it was only like about, 4 days or so, and they spent about $75,000 in our state. So I think the economic impact is amazing. And also the fact that we were helped with professional development because the director of photography on it is a local guy. And he's like, there's no way I would have been able to work on this international spot, you know, unless, you know, it wasn't during the pandemic. So there were a lot of silver linings, you could say.
Right. Well, and great to grab some opportunities while they last. So has that, I mean, obviously, a lot more states have different policies now for operating under pandemic conditions. Has the phone stopped ringing with things like this?
It's gotten a little quieter, but then we're also, you know, shooting here with our own filmmakers, you know, like with Colleen. You know, she had great an impact up in Northeast Iowa with her shoot. And so we have another one coming up, you know, with our other round of Greenlight grants. So we're actually, you know, creating our own destiny, so to speak, with people right here in our state.
And over the years, we have talked about the ups and downs of filmmaking in Iowa. There were some very heady times. There were some low lows. But tell me about what's going on right now and tell me about these Greenlight grants.
Well, the Greenlight grants are to help build a foundation. because I really believe in the homegrown Iowa talent here. So we want to recognize people who are here, give them some funds, and help them leverage their professional development.
So tell me about the kinds of projects that you're trying to get going in Iowa. I mean, we've talked about Complete Bull. Tell me about some of the other things that are percolating.
Yeah, we launched this last year, and Colleen was part of a group of four people who received a total of $140,000 from the state. So you probably have heard of Andrew Sherburn over in Iowa City. He had the workshop documentary about Iowa Writers Workshop. Scott Siepker, doing a documentary on Niall Kinnick. Of course, you know who that is. And then John Richard over in Iowa City also is doing one on the Iowa Mountaineers. And then on this fresh crop of Greenlight grant recipients, we have Justin Norman. He's doing a comedy. I heard you talking about comedy earlier. And he is doing a comedy series called Tube Lords. And it's a look at some once popular YouTubers. So I expect really fun series from him. And then also I just got done talking to Graham Swan of Fairfield, and he's working on a feature film down in Fairfield this fall. And he's a great poster child, as is Colleen, in that they are writing about what they know. And he came to Iowa a little over a year ago, and while he was living on this farm north of Fairfield, he started writing this feature film, and he was inspired by Iowa. So it's Iowa kind of becomes a character and influences, much like what you guys have over in the Iowa Writers Workshop.
Yeah, I'm curious, Liz and Colleen, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. Of course, we have seen the way that people interact with content change so dramatically over the years, with so many streaming services now available. But the pandemic has changed that even further, closing movie theaters and shutting down big Hollywood productions. Liz, do you see this as a real moment of opportunity for homegrown productions, for getting an audience that you may have had a hard time reaching otherwise?
I really do. I mean, we manufacture entertainment, and I want Iowa to be known as the content capital of the world. You know, we have, you know, the UNESCO City of Literature over there, and we have so many Iowa stories that need to be told. And I think people are ripe for stories in the Midwest. They get tired of the same type of stories and things that happen on the coast. So I think there's going to be an interest in Midwest stories.
And Colleen, what are you feeling about this moment in time and the way that people are interacting with content?
I sometimes get the sense that maybe Hollywood's not as open to filmmakers from other parts of the country. And I do think that this might change things a bit, whether it's because of practical reasons or because theatrical release no longer has to always be the first way to release a good project. And So I feel like it might open some minds, you know, just for, maybe not deliberately, but just a secondary effect of the pandemic.
Well, and of course, it's one thing to get an audience. It's another thing to actually, I guess, turn a profit on a production. With streaming services and the way that people are interacting with content, does that feel like something you are capable of doing right now, Colleen?
It's actually working out surprisingly well so far. I feel like Complete Bull is a little bit more scary for me because I'm working with investors for the first time and it's bigger dollar production. But I can say I've been lucky that every streaming project, every production I've had so far has turned a profit in the end. And it's sometimes a matter of just being patient until it's on multiple platforms and they're all sort of sending a check every month. But I feel very fortunate in that so far.
And looking out over the next couple of years, you have just filmed the pilot for Complete Bull. What's the timeline? What comes next?
We've really filmed it as a proof of concept, because if you can imagine calling a streaming platform and trying to explain what an artificial inseminator is, it creates some strange conversations. And we felt like we had to shoot this first before we pitch it. So we'll now be taking it to various streaming platforms to see if somebody will be interested in funding the full series.
All right. Well, good luck, and keep us posted on that, Colleen.
I will. Thank you.
Colleen Bradford Krantz of Pink Spear Productions. She released her first television series, Unintended, Unlocking a Nation's Pregnancy Secrets on Vimeo. That's available for on-demand streaming through that service. And also just filmed Complete Bull. It's a drama about a female animal scientist reluctantly entering the male-dominated world of livestock insemination. And Liz Gilman, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Liz Gilman is executive producer with Produce Iowa, and things have been hopping with television production in Iowa during the pandemic. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to take a look back through history. Of course, we've just marked the 75th anniversary of the dropping of atomic bombs on Japan, and scientists in Iowa played an important role in developing those weapons. We'll find out more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.